Take-Two has come out and said that they didn't close studios, they merely laid off all of the employees there or something. Plus, one government says game companies don't have to keep old games playable. Tonight is May 19th, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is everyone, Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Pod culture ass. Oh man, who let all the hogwash in here? It was me. I want you to know it was me. I'm letting all the hogwash in here because there's a lot of it tonight. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a happy graduation edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. That's right. This weekend, at least in my area, I know everybody's got different school calendars, but this is graduation weekend. I went to a neighbor's graduation party on Saturday, which they invite the adults because we give them money for graduating high school, because theoretically that should only happen once in their life, and so they get money out of it. And so they invite all their adult friends over when they really want to spend time with their friends from school. But anyway, it's a wonderful tradition. Some people, they had like four or five graduation parties. That's a lot of money to give out. Luckily, only one kid likes us enough. But if you have graduated from something, or you know someone who's graduated, someone in your family has graduated from high school, congratulations. It is hogwash now that you have to go deal with the real world. I look forward to seeing what those of you who graduated do next, now that you're not stuck in high school. E3VL says, real world is after college. Now, see, here's the thing. College isn't for everybody. And I say that as somebody who did graduate from a major state university. It's not for everybody. There are absolutely trade schools to pick up a trade college is not the be all end all of everything anymore, especially with how much it costs. So for some people, the real world starts now. Others of us, it started back in 1991, and that was one of the reasons MTV stopped playing music videos. Yeah, that's right. I went there. But congratulations for making it that far, this far so far, and hopefully good times are ahead. But I understand maybe you have a graduation party that you're attending tonight here on this Sunday night. We do tape the show live each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. But we are also a podcast. And so if you want to join us during the week and even suggest topics that we talk about, head on over to our Discord, vognetwork.com/Discord. That is where I will be throughout the week. That is where you also get updates throughout the week about things going on with us at the VOG Network. And also people get to submit stories. And I believe all of the stories tonight came from people in our Discord server. So y'all drove what we talk about here. So if you don't like the stories that I talked about and you'd rather me talk about something else, you can go onto our Discord and put the link in there. And it will likely be in the show. I don't pick everything because sometimes I want to talk about something that y'all don't know about yet. But for the most part, that is a very much an indicator of what I think people want to talk about on this 1 hour a week that I get here on Sunday nights. Let's start up with a fun follow-up here. This is a good follow-up. I like these kind of follow-ups. I wish we didn't have to talk about the story in the first place, but this is a good follow-up. I talked about a couple of weeks ago, enemy number one in entertainment circles, at least to people who consume entertainment, is a man by the name of David Zaslav. And he is the current CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery. And he has been on a tear making sure that Warner Brothers Discovery is profitable. And the way that he has been doing that has been by canceling things, terminating deals with established media properties, taking entire movies and that have been completed and just never releasing them. And that way they get a tax break. They can reclaim the loss on taxes because they will never make money with that. And so that is a loss on the taxes. And generally doing that stuff. And, you know, even possibly losing his main cash cow, which is great. I don't know if SSJ 100 Matt is here, but Pod Culture is here, and he's going to check out and be like, okay, I'll be back in 5 minutes. But David Zaslav, his media properties own the best sports coverage of a particular round ball sports ball thing, and they actually, like, even the people who watch that type of stuff say it is the best out of any sport, the coverage there when they go inside of this association. David Zaslav's like, we don't need them to be successful, and their rights negotiations are up, and it looks like one of the other networks is actually going to win the rights, and therefore that amazing pre-show and that amazing coverage is going to go away. But hey, David Zaslav saves a couple $1 billion at this point, because now they don't have to pay for the rights, and they don't have to pay for the production crew to put on that content. It's going to be a win. I mean, they're gonna save money. Pod Culture says his name sounds like a Batman villain. I mean, yeah, he is, yeah. And Rob Roberts says, we can talk sports all we want as long as it's to dunk on Zaslav. Yes. So, I apologize if this is how you're going to hear the news, but I will be specific. If you really like Inside the NBA, you better enjoy it while it lasts, because it looks like NBC is going to get that contract and it's no longer going to be on TNT. Because David Zaslav said a couple years ago, we don't need the NBA. And the NBA is like, oh, really? Well, NBC is offering us a little bit more money. And even though we've had a 40-year relationship, you said you don't need us anymore. So why would we? And also, like, you know, he's been tightening the purse strings. So there's no guarantee that once he gets the contract that the quality is going to stay the same as it was. And so they're going to probably jump ship to NBC. And it's all because David Zaslav's like, we don't need the NBA, whatever. We don't need him. And the NBA is like, okay, cool. See ya. But anyway, this is about a reversal, and it's probably because the tax break was not as big as they needed, and probably it wasn't worth the PR nightmare that came up out of this. So, Polygon reports that Warner Brothers Discovery has been backed down from its plans to delist more than a dozen indie games published by Adult Swim Games, that label, from Steam and digital console stores. Warner Brothers Discovery now plans to transfer ownership of some of these games back to the indie game devs that made them, according to developers who would have been affected by the planned delistings. Plans to delist the Adult Swim Games catalog from digital stores, or retire them, as Warner Brothers Discovery had worded it, became public in March and were widely criticized as a cold corporate move that could make some indie games unavailable to purchase. We actually covered it here at the time. That strong criticism appears to have played a part in Warner Brothers Discovery's revised plan to transfer ownership of the games back to their creators. This is another example of making a noise publicly had a positive effect. These developers could have stayed quiet and written a strongly worded letter to Warner Brothers Discovery, and it wouldn't have, and then they would have lost their games. But by making it public, by getting the media to talk about it, by getting, like, probably not getting me specifically to talk about it, but getting people like me that have larger audiences and larger influence than me to talk about it, probably helped fix this. Because, as one developer put it, it's literally three clicks to transfer ownership of the store, the Steam page, to them. It's three clicks, takes maybe 5 minutes, and they weren't willing to do that. And I guess enough of this, we're like, fine, let's just spend the few clicks and stuff like this. So news of the policy reversal was first revealed by developer Owen Deary, who is behind puzzle adventure game Small Radios Big Televisions, which was originally published by Adult Swim Games in 2016. Deary also broke the news of the original plan to retire the titles back in March. I believe he actually put his game up for free on itch.io. It's like, okay, it's not going to be on Steam anymore. Here it is on itch. Enjoy. On the social media platform Twitter, now known as a single letter, Deary wrote that Small Radios Big Televisions will not be retired, despite previous communication that it would be. Quote, ownership and store listings will return to me, unquote. So this is good, you know, because the reason this was an issue was because when you have a Steam page, you also have the community hub. So you have all of those discussions. You have all of the artwork. You have, if you had community trading cards, you have all of those achievements. You had all of those. And while Warner Brothers Discovery said, oh, you can just republish it on a new Steam page, you lose all of those existing purchases that you've already paid for. And these are games that are from like 2016, 2017, stuff like that. So these aren't recent games. And that's probably part of the reason why they're being retired, because maybe the accounts payable, maybe, you know, Warner Brothers Discovery got $50. In a pay period, whatever the pay period is for Steam, and they take their cut, and then they have to send $30 or whatever to the developer that made the game, and that it costs more money to pay that person to do that. So why, you know, it was a money loss for them, for Warner Brothers Discovery at that point, which I get. I totally understand. But transferring the pages back to the developer so they can get that money themselves and have that community was the right answer that they should have done from the beginning. But instead, they were like, we're just going to shut it off. We don't want to have to deal with it. So, yeah. So this is like one of the few good things Warner Brothers Discovery has done. So kudos to whoever inside Warner Brothers Discovery made this happen, because I will say that while there are a lot of things that we can say, you know, hate about Warner Brothers Discovery, the people at the lowest level are not the problem. In fact, they probably hate this just as much as you do. They probably hate that they have to come into work and do these things that they know are wrong. They want to do it right. They are not allowed to do it right. And so you have to finally get somebody who's high enough to be able to change it. And that takes work externally, and that takes work internally in the company as well. So kudos to the people who push for this inside Warner Brothers Discovery. You are good people, and I hope you get out of there and get a job that you can go into work being happy going into work at some point. So, yeah, and Tigerclaw says it's for the better about the TV stuff. You need a cable subscription for TNT. You can watch those games for free on NBC OTA. No, they're going to put them on Peacock. That's where they're going to be going, is on Peacock, just like how the TNT, it was all on Max. So if you had Max, you could access all the stuff that was on the cable stuff side. NBC is going to put a lot of that stuff on Peacock, just like they do with a lot of the stuff they already cover, like, you know, Premier League football, some of the golf stuff that they cover. They have a whole sports thing there that they don't cover on NBC, and they got rid of their other linear sports network. They got rid of NBC Sports Network. It doesn't exist anymore. They don't show as much on over-the-air TV as they have access to. Robert says Olympics, I would assume. Yes, like the Olympics coming up, the Paris Olympics, most of that is going to be on Peacock because they... they don't have enough TV channels to air all of it. And if you have Peacock, you can see everything. They actually do have the sports that Americans don't care about because no American is in it. Things like table tennis, things like badminton. I mentioned badminton because in 1996, when the Olympics was here in Atlanta, that was the only event we went to. That's the only event we could get tickets to. It was a lottery, and we lost the lottery except for badminton. We wanted baseball, and we didn't get baseball tickets. Anyway, those you can find there on their streaming service. But because they don't have enough TV channels to show everything that's going on. So let's move on from TV and talk about cars. Let's talk about another thing that's not really germane to this podcast. It is, but this is about video games. So let's talk about cars. I'll talk about the car that I have. Now, my car is almost 9 years old at this point. So you can consider me a bad person for owning a Tesla because of who runs Tesla. But realize that I bought the car before he showed his true colors to everybody. And I don't want a car payment right now. So the car's in good condition. It's paid off. I don't see a need to get rid of it and get a car payment just because I don't like the person who's running the company right now. So, however, a feature coming to new cars is not coming at all because somebody smart there realized that it was a gimmick and there's no point in having it. Electrek reports that Tesla is telling new Model S and Model X buyers that don't have access to the Steam gaming, or that they will not have access to Steam gaming inside their electric vehicles. Even though Tesla has been investing heavily into integrating video games into its in-car entertainment system, it still surprised many when Tesla said earlier this year that it planned to go as far as integrating Valve's Steam, an online video game store and distribution platform, in its vehicles. Steam has such a large library of games, including high-performance games that haven't been integrated into Tesla vehicles before. In late 2022, Tesla officially launched its Steam beta native app in new Model S and Model X vehicles. So this is basically just the dash, just the in the screen that is in the center console. And there's also apparently a screen in the back seats, which my car doesn't have, but that one also would work. The automaker wrote to people taking delivery of new Model S and Model X vehicles saying, quote, Tesla is updating the gaming computer in your Model X and your vehicle is no longer capable of playing Steam games. All other entertainment and app functionalities are unaffected, unquote. So Tesla has been known to drop existing apps in vehicles before while in new vehicles while keeping them in vehicles already delivered, like the Disney Plus app. So you're probably sitting there going, why? Why does a car need games in it? That's dangerous. And I actually did filmed a full video about a lot of the gaming, because my car can play games. And I debunked some of the things, and I know it's not enough for some people, but you can only play these games when the car's in park. If you take the car out of park while playing a game, it shuts off the game. Because you shouldn't be playing games while the car is in motion. The intended use was while you are at a supercharger charging your car, it gives your kids something to do on the screen. That's the idea of the theater and the arcade. And the theater has a lot of streaming apps except Disney Plus, because when Disney Plus pulled all their advertising from Twitter, the person that was in charge of both companies, both Twitter and Tesla, which, yes, at the time it was called Twitter, he basically said, okay, in retaliation, we're pulling Disney Plus out of all of our vehicles. And then he basically said, okay, and then cooler heads prevailed, and he only pulled them from vehicles that had never used it before. If you had already used Disney Plus in your vehicle, you kept Disney Plus. It's really just a web app. Like, it's not, they didn't make anything special. It's really just a web app that they use. Fifth Dream asks, how fast was it hacked to play while moving? You can hack the computers in your Tesla. It is an extremely complicated, it takes like a day and a half. And it involves like literally taking apart the dashboard and all of this stuff. I know somebody who does it. And I know somebody who does it all the time. But it is not, you can't just like stick a USB stick in and, you know, overwrite the firmware and boom, you're done. They are, because it is, regulated by the NHTSA, they actually do have a lot of robust security measures that take it. It's not impossible, but I couldn't do it. And I'm fairly technical. I couldn't do it. There are people who can, and I'm sure they have made it to where you can play games and run the movies while the car is in motion. But It is not something that a layperson can do. So they are being very responsible when you can view Netflix and Hulu or play games. And I did a video on it. It's no longer on our YouTube channel because I scrubbed all the Tesla content off of our YouTube channel because we started getting comments that we just didn't want to deal with anymore. And when I made those vehicles, Tesla was seen in a better light than it is now because of the person at the top. And so we were like, you know what? We're a video game network, not a car network. We scrubbed the content. But I made a thing that showed, like, here's the games that are on it, because it does have a gaming computer in it. What they were adding was the ability to use Steam and probably using, I believe it is like a variant of Linux that is running the in-dash entertainment, not the whole car, just the in-dash entertainment part. And so it was running the Linux version of Steam. So it was kind of like a Steam Deck. It was a Steam Deck in your car. Then Valve came out with the Steam Deck after they started working on this, and they're like, yeah, just use the Steam Deck. Now, what they did is they released it as a beta to certain customers, and they obviously track everything you do. Car companies do that now if they can, and they absolutely do. And they probably tracked and realized that nobody actually gave a crap about playing Steam in the in-car dash of a Tesla. And even me, the last time I played one of the games in my car was when I filmed that video for this podcast and put it up on our YouTube channel. It's the last time I did it. So it is obviously not something that they should be spending a lot of time on. And they're doing a lot of cost cutting at Tesla anyway, probably a little bit more than they should, which is a little concerning. So I would hold off on buying a Tesla right now because all their layoffs have been in the service department, which has been overworked and understaffed for a long time. And their supercharger team that made the great charging network and kept it running at a 99.95% uptime. Yeah, he laid all those people off. So the network's going to start going down a little bit more and it's not going to grow. Anyway, E3 Vale says they should spend time fixing the Cybertruck. So there are different people that do different things. The people that engineer the cars are different than the people who write software for the in-car entertainment. So, and they are also different from the actual professional that runs the social media accounts, not an intern. A major corporation hasn't had an intern running their social media since like 2005. I promise. Everybody's like, oh, you should fire the intern that wrote this. No, it was a committee. It was a marketing committee with decades of experience in social media marketing. SJ1andMatt says, I mean, it's ideal use is that when you're in a charging station, but I think folks who drive for hours would rather do anything else than be in their car playing games while it charges. That is incorrect because, you know, I can only stretch my legs for so long, especially if it's raining outside. So, I mean, I have, when I do long trips, I will pull up. Usually 2048 is the game in the car that I play, even though I've got the Atari games. I've got the Beach Buggy Racing, which is their Mario Kart. Stardew Valley's on it. Cuphead's on it. Fallout Shelter's on it. But they were compiled specifically for the car, so that's independent of the Steam stuff. Anyway, let's stop talking about cars and start talking about video games. Just kidding. We're going to talk about a government and what they said. So let's talk about this is a story that's been going around that I haven't really covered all that much because I've had other stuff going on. But Video Games Chronicle reports that the UK government, which is not in the European Union, so this is not the European Union, this is just the UK, has said that games companies have no legal requirement in UK law compelling them to support older products. So this comes in response to the Stop Killing Games campaign, which saw a petition calling for provisions in UK law to protect older games reaching 10,000 signatures. A statement from the Department of Culture, Media and Sport reads, quote, customers should be aware that there is no requirement in UK law compelling software companies and providers to support older versions of their operating systems, software, or connected products. There may be occasions where companies make commercial decisions based on the high running costs of maintaining older servers for video games that have declining user bases, unquote. They did state that all companies operating in the UK are still beholden to consumer law. They say, quote, if consumers are led to believe that a game will remain playable indefinitely for certain systems despite the end of physical support, the Consumer Protection from Unfair Trading Regulations 2008 action may require that the game remains technically feasible, for example, available offline, to play under those circumstances, unquote. So in a statement to GamesIndustry.biz, a representative from the Stop Killing Games group said it will be contacting a lawyer to investigate the legality of this practice in territories around the world. The petition is still ongoing. It currently has 23,001 signatures at the time of writing. How much do you bet that one was the person who wrote this article? I'm not going to bet any money because I don't want to lose any money, but that would be hilarious. Oh, 23,000. That's an even number. Let me sign it and say it's 23,001. Ha ha. Should it reach 100,000, it will be considered for parliamentary debate. However, I believe you probably have to be a UK citizen to count. I don't know. So what this Stop Killing Games campaign, it actually came out of Ubisoft shutting down The Crew. So The Crew is was a racing game, but its big thing was you raced around the United States throughout many cities, and so you would actually race like on the highways between cities, and they had the U.S. map. Ironically, they didn't have Atlanta at all; it didn't exist, but Chattanooga, Tennessee, did, and so that was the closest city to where I lived, and it wasn't like a real accurate representation. Of those smaller cities, but you went through them and, you know, stuff like that. The bigger cities, yes, it was, they had the landmarks for like the major cities like New York and Los Angeles and stuff. But apparently, you needed an online connection because you were always connected to the other players. And so as you played, you could see other players on the map. And you could race in races with either all the bots or against other players. And so it was designed from as far from the beginning as you can get to be an online experience. And the only way you could experience it was online with other players. Other racing games that have the same type of feature, like Forza Horizon, have an offline mode where if it can't connect online, then it replaces the other players with bots or drivatars. You could still play it without connecting to the internet. But if you are connected to the internet, then you see other people in the world playing the game like you do. The Crew didn't do that. And so The Crew is shutting down. And so now that game, The Crew, is no longer playable. And it was even removed from people's libraries. And Questbuster even says, I don't really play racing games, but I liked The Crew because of the single-player content, which I enjoyed, was pretty fun to drive across pseudo-America. And yes, that was why it was kind of, it was really cool. There is a new Crew, but it's not that concept of driving through pseudo-America. It's in Hawaii, I think. And so you're driving around Hawaii or something like that. It's in a specific area. And so they kind of abandoned the, you're driving across the United States of America, going through small towns that are actually real, that are representative of the geographical location, things like that. It was a really cool concept. There's no reason you can't play it online except for the fact that they designed it to be so intertwined with online functionality that they can't walk it back. And there aren't enough people playing it to make it worth it them to walk it back. The thing I didn't like about The Crew, which they did fix, I believe, in later iterations of The Crew and sequels, like The Crew Motorfest, is because it was an online game, there was no difficulty setting. They did put a difficulty setting later. But I actually got to a point in The Crew, because I think I played it on a free weekend or something like that. I got to a point in The Crew that I couldn't advance because you needed to place top three, and I could not place top three. And there was no way I could lower the difficulty because it was set. It was the same difficulty for everybody. And people who were better at racing games than me had no problem with this race. I wound up doing it 10 or 15 times and asked myself, am I having fun? And the answer was no. And so that was the point I stopped playing The Crew. Later ones actually did introduce a difficulty level. Forza Horizon introduced a difficulty level. You can set it when you can even set it when you're making an online race. You can set the difficulty of the other drivatars. And then, you know, you can smoke the drivatars and lose to all your friends who are better racers than you. But the crew, the first crew, didn't do that. And as Sharon Man says, no Bobby Blackwolf mode, no sale. Essentially. Dark Tessia says, can confirm Motorfest did feature an easy mode that I went with. I believe I actually played a demo of Motorfest. There was like a free weekend or something. And so I did play with Motorfest. And yes, they fixed the difficulty issue in Motorfest, but it didn't have the same draw to me that the crew did with the pseudo America. But anyway, the Stop Killing Game campaign, what they want is that these companies that make these online only games, when they shut down the server, they need to do something to make the game still playable. Either by open sourcing the server or doing something where, you know, you get a dummy server so you can still play the single player content without worrying about the server, or, you know, something like that. And the UK government says, well, no, they don't have to. Like, it is not currently illegal for them to do that. Now, if they get their 100,000 signatures and this comes up into parliamentary debate, nothing's going to change because they're not going to understand technology and they're not going to understand this. And what the companies will actually say is, because in this text, there was something very interesting in here. They said, if consumers are led to believe that a game will remain playable indefinitely, that was what they actually said in this statement. And the game companies will say, well, no, we actually put on the box, ability to play could go away. Like, I can't remember the exact wording, but it's like, you know, they claim that they make it clear that you won't be able to play the game indefinitely, that it's subject to, you know, the servers being up or something like that. They've got some legal wording, but it's there, and they do put it on the back of the box, or they put it on the store page, since we don't look at the back of the box anymore. So I think the UK is out. The EU, the European Union, because of like GDPR and the other things that they've done, they are more likely to figure something out to require this. And then everybody else will have to follow, because they're going to have to follow EU law, and that benefits the rest of us. So now the last story, we're going to talk about layoffs again, except these are layoffs that already happened. We didn't talk about the Take-Two layoffs, but Take-Two did some layoffs earlier this month. IGN reports that earlier this month, Take-Two announced a cost reduction plan that include project cancellations, the layoffs of 5% of their workforce, and other spending cuts. Amid this announcement came reports based on internal documentation that seemed to confirm Take-Two was closing Ollie Ollie World developer Roll 7 and Kerbal Space Program 2 developer Intercept Games. However, this is where it gets fun about, like, legal language and trying to convert that into normal people language. When IGN asked Take-Two CEO Strauss Zelnick in a call today, also sounds like a Batman villain, why these closures happened, he told me, quote, "We didn't shutter those studios." He says, "We didn't shutter those studios, to be clear, and we are always looking at our release schedule across all of our studios to make sure that it makes sense. So we are being very judicious, because we are in the middle of a cost reduction program that we've already concluded and are now finally rolling out. We've announced that we are saving $165 million in existing and future costs, but we haven't shuttered anything," unquote. The reports, which came from a WARN Act notice posted by pointed out by Game Developer and internal documentation seen by Bloomberg, seem pretty definitive, so this was a surprising response. This reporter at IGN followed up by asking Zelnick if he was denying the reports, at which point a PR representative for the company stepped in with the following. You know a question is good when the PR representative steps in to answer for the person you're interviewing. That's how you know you have a good question. Quote, "What we've said is, in the 8K filing that we put out, we've talked about the cost reduction plan and approximately 5% reduction in headcount worldwide, but we did not give a label-by-label breakdown of what that looks like," unquote. IGN asked one more time, asking if the studios existed or not. PR reiterated that, quote, "We have not provided any additional color beyond what I just said," unquote. So the WARN Act notice, which is basically, I forget, it's an acronym. I forget what it stands for. But it's basically, the idea is you have to give notice in certain states and in certain countries as well that you are going to be laying them off. You can't just lay someone off like that. You have to, you know, give them certain amount of days notice. The WARN Act notice for Intercept Games in Seattle specified a closure as a reason for the layoffs of 70 people, which is roughly the entire total of all of the employees there. It does seem possible Take-Two has somehow folded both of these studios into private division, given that the label will be taking up maintenance of Kerbal Space Program 2 going forward. IGN asked Zelnick if we should take these reports as a sign that private division itself is in some kind of trouble. He says, quote, and he actually answered this, not the PR person, quote, I don't think so. I think, as I said, we're reviewing all of the projects company-wide, and sometimes we do have to make hard choices. We just tend to leave those announcements to the label, and we don't tend to talk about them, so we're not trying to be cute or difficult today. It's just that we don't tend to bring those discussions into these meetings, unquote. So they closed the studio, and they were like, well, it's up to the studio to say they're closed. But they laid off everybody that would say that. In a follow-up email, Take-Two PR clarified that the entire organization contributed to cost-saving efforts and that Private Division was still planning on supporting games such as Moon Studios' No Rest for the Wicked and upcoming games Tales of the Shire and an unreleased Game Freak project that the publisher announced last year. On the last few calls, Zelnick had said that the company was in growth mode and as recently as February that it had no current plans for layoffs. Yes, in February they had no plans for layoffs. In May, they did. He's spoken before about the state of industry post-pandemic, noting that other companies undergoing layoffs had gotten, quote, a little fat and happy during the pandemic, unquote, and had overspent as a result. That is accurate. That is 100% accurate in the entire tech industry because everybody was staying home and using computers and using that stuff, so they had this amazing growth. And they were like, we need to hire to support this, and now that people are going back outside, people are going out and touching grass, people are going out and living their lives the way we should, we're using technology less, we're playing games less, we're using software less, and so now they're losing money, and so they have to lay off the people that they overhired in 2020. That's happening all across tech. But he did mention that Take-Two is in the same boat. Zelnick did say, quote, We were very fortunate during the pandemic. We really did as well as many of our competitors. But I said, when asked during the pandemic, that we expected post-pandemic demand to be below that of the pandemic demand, but above pre-pandemic demand. There's a lot of P's and pan and pre's. And that's exactly what did happen. That said, I think we did get over our skis a little bit, and I think we were overly ambitious in terms of building a fixed overhead. We have this three-part strategy to be the most creative, the most innovative, and the most efficient company in the business, and I'm not sure we were delivering fully on the promise of efficiency. The hardest thing I do as a chief executive is part ways with friends and colleagues, and that's always the last choice we make. We always try to find efficiencies elsewhere, through vendors, the way we structure, through operations. At times, though, it's unavoidable, and this is one of those moments. So we are reducing our headcount by about 5%. It doesn't feel good to do it, but it is our obligation to be a really efficient business. And the good news is we do feel like we're structured really well going forward and have the right amount of operating leverage. So as we bring this new pipeline to bear, we will generate the results that reflect that, unquote. Now, here's the thing I will say. Even though I made the joke that his name also sounds like a Batman villain, I do believe him because I'm in a company. I work for a day company, and I'm not going to talk about this too much, but I work for a company that has had to do layoffs multiple times in the last year. And I know the CEO of my company, which we're a small company. We're much smaller now, but we're very small. We're a small business. He hates it. This is not what he signed up for, was doing four rounds of layoffs. That's not what he signed up for. So when Zelnick says, I hate this, this is tough, it's the hardest part of my job, I believe him. Because it is. He's got to do it because Take-Two is a publicly traded company, and so the shareholders come first. that doesn't mean he enjoys it. He doesn't come in as like, I can't wait to lay off Bob from accounting at Kerbal, whatever. You know, he doesn't come into work like that. And, you know, but he makes a lot of money to put this on his head, so he does it. He gets paid lots of money to make up for the fact that he has to do things like this that he hates. So I'm not feeling bad for him, but I do believe him when he says, this sucks. I don't like doing this. As for Intercept Games in Roll 7, the prognosis still doesn't seem great. What's even stranger is that this isn't the first time that Take-Two has done this to a Kerbal Space Program developer. Back in 2020, a studio called Star Theory was making Kerbal Space Program 2 before Private Division took the game away from them. While some employees were moved to Intercept Games, the rest were left adrift to desperately pitch new projects to save the studio, only to have the COVID-19 pandemic cut off their pitching opportunities and led to the studio's closure. 2K Marin was similarly closed quietly without Take-Two formally acknowledging the change. 2K Marin had been closed for 2 years. Because while they may have not closed the studio, they got rid of everybody that worked for it. And that is kind of what they have said here, is that, oh, the studio's not closed, just nobody works there right now. But it's still closed. And this article that I'm reading from doesn't have the actual statement, but they do say the legal statement is that is why we are proposing the closure of these studios. They haven't actually closed them yet. They have merely proposed to close them as pursuant to the WARN Act. And that is why that is their justification for laying people off. They are proposing the closure of these studios. They have not yet actually closed these studios legally. And so that is where they can get away with saying, well, no, we haven't closed those studios, when they have. It's just not legally done yet. So the studio is technically and legally still open. They just have nobody working for it anymore. E3 Vale says Microsoft should make a statement instead of being silent, saying that we overbought studios during the pandemic and to entice Activision to sell their company to us. Now that demand is higher, we thought we have to close studios. So here's the thing about the Microsoft one. And I had kind of like skirted around, because I talked about the Tango Gameworks and Arkane Studios and stuff last week that Microsoft did, which was actually Bethesda Studios that they laid off. And I kind of skirted around it, but Orange Lounge Radio kind of helped make this point a little bit more clear. And I'm like, man, I wish I had said it that way. So I get to do it now. Xbox is a division of Microsoft. Xbox did the acquisition of Bethesda. Xbox did the acquisition of Activision. But Microsoft has suddenly taken an interest in what Xbox division is doing. So I do not believe that Phil Spencer or Sarah Bond or Matt Booty or any of the people that I mentioned last week, I don't believe they intended for what they had to do. I don't believe they intended that to happen. I think what it is Microsoft is suddenly like Big Daddy Microsoft that owns the Xbox division. Big Daddy Microsoft is now actually taking a hard look, and they don't care about the games as much. They're like, you need to do this and this and this and this. And if you don't do it, we will. And so Xbox executives have had to go and kind of take the fall for shutting down Tango Gameworks, for shutting down Arkane Studios, for shutting down what they shut down last week. And it's because Microsoft suddenly took an interest in what Xbox was doing, which they were kind of hands off on Xbox for a time. So I think it's kind of important, at least in that sense. And Take-Two, that's not what's happening at Take-Two, because Take-Two is the big daddy company here. But, you know, there should be a differentiation between Microsoft and Xbox. Even though Xbox is part of Microsoft, Xbox largely does its own thing. It always had oversight from Big Daddy Microsoft, but Microsoft finally like brought out the magnifying glass and looked very closely and said, no, you have to now fix this. Now, should Microsoft have done that earlier? Probably. But they didn't, and so they're here now. S. Jared and Matt says, being furloughed was popular during the early part of the pandemic in the tech sector. All I will say is not just then. Going from furlough and not being and not bringing folks back was a way of soft laying off folks. The shareholders of Microsoft gave the marching orders. They should be standing up on stage answering for the layoffs. If you don't, if you've never worked in tech or something, you don't understand what S. Jaron and Matt's saying. I'm gonna explain what it is. So there are three different ways that you can be let go from a company. Okay, and they all have different meanings. Okay, so a layoff means that we no longer need you to work this position. Okay. However, a layoff actually legally means you could possibly come back and work in that position. You could be rehired in that position because it still exists. If you hear reduction in force or reduction in workforce, that means the position has been eliminated. So they will lay you off because your job no longer exists. If you are laid off, your job technically still exists. They just don't need as many people doing it, or they don't need you doing it. Or you have what's called a furlough. And you hear this a lot when the government shuts down that people get furloughed. So a furlough means you have not been laid off. You still work for the company. However, you do not actually do any work, and you are not actually paid. However, what companies can do is, while you are on a furlough, so let's say you have been put on an 8-week furlough, you will still get your benefits. So if you had health care, you would keep your health care. You would keep any other ancillary benefits that come with your employment. But they are just not paying you your salary, which also means if you are getting 401k, you're not paying anything into your 401k. So I guess that benefit goes away too. But you still get your benefits. And then at any point during that 8 weeks, I think like with a week's notice or something, they can say, hey, we're cutting your furlough short. You're going to be back next week. And then you get back to your old job. You get paid. You're not rehired because you were never laid off. Now, at the end of those 8 weeks, if there's no spot for you, then they lay you off at the end of the 8 weeks. And then you lose your benefits and all that stuff. So that is still pretty popular, I will tell you that, in the tech sector. That's not just 4 years ago. Rob Roberts, who would know more about this than I do, I am from the tech sector side. Government furlough can also reduce pay in favor of extra leave time. For example, 10% pay cut in exchange for 16 hours leave happened to California employees in 2020 for a year. So 16 hours of leave a month. So you could take more time off. That is another way that it can work. But in the tech sector, at least, it's no, you don't work. And, you know, what they will say is you should probably spend this time looking for another job. And then if you get another job, then you turn in your resignation and boom, you are gone that day. Then they don't have to lay you off. They don't have to worry about any severance if there is any. There isn't always severance when you get laid off. But they kind of hope that during your 8-week furlough, you're interviewing, and if you accept an offer from another company, then you just resign. It's effective that day and you're done. There's no 2-week notice, no nothing, and they cut off your benefits that day, and you can go start that day, that next day, or that even that day, at your next company. So that's the difference between if you hear a layoff, a reduction in workforce, or a furlough. NE3Ville says, so basically on standby. Yes, because things that could happen is like, okay, we just, you know, furloughed a whole bunch of people. And then suddenly, somebody that survived was like, I'm not sticking around for the next one, so I'm going to go find another job. And so they turn in their notice. Well, you can now go to one of those people that was on furlough saying, hey, so-and-so resigned. We're going to bring you back, and you're going to take their spot. And that way, you know, as long as you haven't yet found another job, you're on standby and they can bring you back. And I think like they have to like put in like you get a week's notice because sometimes people are like, yeah, I'll ride out the furlough and go on vacation. And so they can't, you can't be like on vacation and them saying, no, you have to come into the office tomorrow. They have to give you like a week's notice to come back if they're a good company. SJR Matt says, if you're a standby, but you can't put your bills on standby, so people look for other work. Exactly. It is a silent, it is a silent layoff. So we, on that happy note, we're going to skip the music break. Because I talked a lot for that. I thought it was only 8:42 and not 8:52. So we're not going to, I didn't have a good music break anyway. I ran out, like, so I had an old standby, so it's fine. It's not like I was playing anything new tonight. So coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California that talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And we like to check in with them and see if there's actually any happy news other than the Adult Swim. The Adult Swim games was happy news. But see if there's anything happy that we can talk about this week. Sacramento, are you there?
I am here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well, yes. So any is there good news? I talked a lot about bad news, but is there good news?
Yeah, maybe a couple things, depending on how you look at it. I would say definitely in the good news department, we love accessibility, right?
Yep.
So Microsoft has announced a new controller called the Proteus controller. I hope I'm saying that right. It's kind of interesting the way it's designed. It looks like it's a little bit like these like four spheres that you can kind of plug and play in different sorts of configurations to make controllers different sizes for different hand capabilities. So yeah, accessibility is a good thing, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and that. I would say the other big thing that is kind of on the fence is that Redfall is going to get that offline mode after all.
Okay.
Even though Microsoft has closed the studio, it feels like there is a last breath or a last hurrah, if you will, for both Hi-Fi Rush, because I think Hi-Fi Rush got a final patch this last week as well to close up some issues. And then Redfall is going to get that offline mode after all. So, but I don't know if I would still consider that good news, because it's like, it's at what cost did we get that? So it's still a little,
That being said, if they've already been paying people to build that stuff.
Yes.
And especially from what I understand, that final Redfall thing, it was coming out this month anyway.
Right.
Like it was on target for this month. So it actually makes good financial sense to finish it and get it out there because they've already paid the salary of people for working on it for the past couple months.
You would hope it was kind of in the testing phase at this point, so I worry that might be the corner they're cutting. So it could have an interesting effect on what happens when this releases, but I'm going to try to not think negatively about it and hope for the best.
That being said, they can...
And let's be honest, am I going to play it? Probably not.
Right, but that being said, like, the testing side, they have other studios that could have pitched in on testing, even if they did lay off the testers that were at that particular studio. They could farm that out to one of the other studios that maybe didn't have that much work to do.
Good point.
And that kept them, that would keep them busy. And so, you know, they can try to, because I really like the way you said it last week, which is why I kind of repeated it, is that I don't think the Xbox division likes any of the decisions they had to make, but it came from Big Daddy Microsoft. And I'm, you know, when you were playing like the Sarah Bond clip and stuff, and you're like, this is the sound of somebody who hates this and disagrees with it vehemently, but can't say it.
Yeah, I think it's very clear. I think the proof is in that video. If you watch it, of the Sarah Bond video, I think that it's, I think what she doesn't say says a lot.
Yeah. So, but the Take-Two stuff, I'm like, but you laid off everybody, but they're not closed.
Very different story.
Yeah. I mean, SJR and Matt does say NCAA football is coming out. That's good news. Yes, like that is my sports kryptonite right there, NCAA football. And it comes out on the first day of Southern Fried Gaming Expo, so I won't be playing it.
Now, if you want really, really good news, Bobby, I would have to dip my toe into the rumor mill.
Uh-oh.
But this is the whole like rumor mill from trusted sources with receipts type of thing. Valve may have a new game coming out.
Does it have number three in it?
It does not. It's not that good. Okay. I didn't say this is like, I did not say this was like show stopping, like hallelujah news. I said it was good news. No, but it might be Valve's sort of answer to the Overwatch phenomenon, which is Deadlock is the name of this game. But it even though I say it's Overwatch, it apparently is kind of like a mix of Overwatch and a Dota type game with lanes. So I almost get like a Smite type of feeling from it, but it's a shooter. So yeah, kind of different, but it sounds very interesting if it is in fact legit.
So wait a minute. So Valve is coming out with its response to Overwatch, which itself was a response to Team Fortress 2.
Yes. But they're doing its own spin on it. So it might be something that again is in the Dota universe, kind of like the card game they did, which I don't even remember the name of it, which tells you, I think it was Ancients maybe.
Yeah.
Which tells you about how well it did, which is not very, unfortunately. Valve is actually, well, I mean, Half-Life Alyx was obviously a game changer for VR, but I feel like they've had a couple of flops outside of that, unfortunately. So hopefully this will get them back on track.
So this is what they're putting out instead of putting out Team Fortress 3, because once again, Gabe Newell does not like the number 3.
No, or Portal 3. Let's not never forget, there still has not been a Portal 3, and there probably never will be.
No. But there have been VR games of both Half-Life and Portal that kind of feel like the third game in the series.
Which Half-Life Alyx is arguably Half-Life 3.
Right.
That doesn't want to bear the responsibility of having that number.
Yes,
yeah.
And there is a game called Portal Stories VR, which was not made by Valve, but Valve authorized it. And it was a fan game, but unlike Nintendo, Valve's like, this is cool. Do you want help? And so Valve helped, and that is kind of like a Portal 3.
Yeah.
Actually, the real Portal 3 was not that VR game. It was in Lego Dimensions.
Oh, right.
That was really Portal 3, because that was a continuation of the story from Portal 2 in Lego Dimensions. That was actually Portal 3. So we're getting Team Fortress 3. They're just changing all the characters.
It's becoming, what was that game? It's becoming Frog Fractions.
Yes.
Valve's third games are becoming Frog Fractions. Which, did Frog Fractions ever have a part 3?
I don't think we've found part 3 yet. I don't think we've found it yet.
The plot thickens, yes.
I've started making that joke. I'm like, is this Frog Fractions 3? And yeah. So yeah. So yeah, no, there is some good news, and yes, like the NCAA football, that was good news, but like the trailer came out, so it's like, okay, cool, trailer, woo, you know, and so we had some fun in our Discord, fognetwork.com/discord, some fun talking about that.
Good news for Bobby Blackwolf, anyway, but that's fine. It was your birthday week, so you get some good news.
Yes, I mean, and we're, you know, things for not E3, those times have been announced by some companies, so that'll be some good stuff. Like, what stuff are we getting?
The E3 Memorial Announcement Week.
Yep. So okay, well, that's good, because like it's been kind of sad lately in the game industry, just because, you know.
What do you think, Bobby? I'm curious of your hot take, because, you know, sometimes, just occasionally on OLR, once in a while, I might use a little bit of hyperbole, and I might, you know, say some statements that are a little out there. And last week I said something about this feels like another video game crash that we're experiencing right now. And we have a story at the top of the show tonight that talks about that they have sold only half the PlayStation 5s that they have PlayStation 4s. And it kind of struck me as I'm not surprised actually at all by this news, but I almost feel like that kind of backs up some of the things I was looking at last week, where it's like, I don't know if it's crashing as hard as what happened with Atari. I mean, that was some serious, like serious loss, but I do feel like if this isn't a crash, it's a bandicoot. I don't know what you'd call it, but it's a crash of some sort.
I feel that there's going to be a reckoning about AAA games. I think that is where there might be a crash, is on your high-end, high-fidelity AAA titles, kind of like how we've had in movies, where movies, there has been kind of a crash on your top stuff. Now, all of your big budget has to be a superhero movie or an established franchise. You can't get green light by any major studio. That is the key that I'm talking about here. Any major studio, a big budget, hugely special effects laden thing from a brand new property nobody has ever heard of. And I even read something that was like the guy who created Independence Day. Okay, the ID4, the Will Smith movie about the AOL virus that killed aliens. Spoiler alert. Actually talked to a movie studio, he brought a new thing. And it was actually the same studio executive who greenlit ID4 in the 90s. And he brought a new thing, and he's like, it's going to be great. And he's like, I can't greenlight it. And he's like, what are you talking about? You greenlit ID4, blah, blah, blah. He's like, I wouldn't greenlight ID4 today unless you rebranded it War of the Worlds. That would have been the only way he would have allowed greenlit the movie that became ID4, only if it was actually a retelling of War of the Worlds.
To you youngins out there, I cannot stress what a game changer the original trailer for Independence Day was, where you saw the alien blowing up the White House.
Yes.
You don't understand unless you were like a teenager sitting in the theater when that clip was shown for the first time, like how mind-blowing that was.
Yes.
Like, and you would have seen any movie with that type of footage where it's like, whoa, they did what?
Yeah.
That looked real. How'd they do that? It's wild. Oh, yeah. Pop culture says I thought it was a thing for a V movie at first. There you go. Right. Could have been a V reboot.
So, well, and also the interesting thing about that is because you think there would be like, you know, political pushback or something like that. But our president at the time was Bill Clinton, who actually has always believed that UFOs existed. And he had no problem with the scene.
And it was very obviously
a
movie. Like,
but
it's
yes.
not like it tried to be real by any.
Right.
Like, you know, when you say War of the Worlds, too, like War of the Worlds, like, was famous because people thought it was real.
Yes.
There's no way you were going to watch a movie like Independence Day and think it's real. Like,
but,
it's a very special kind of camp.
But to him, like to Bill Clinton, it wasn't crossing any line.
Yeah.
Whereas if we had never seen that before and it happened today, there would be people that thought they crossed the line. But at ID4, like, even he was like, he wanted to know if UFOs existed and they wouldn't tell him. That's where the plausible deniability, like all the Bill Paxton stuff in ID4 was based on some of the things that Bill Clinton had said in like 93, 94. Because one of his first things was, I want to know what's going on at Area 51. And they wouldn't tell him because of plausible deniability.
Wow.
Also, allegedly, ID4. Originally, and I know we're getting into movies, I'm sorry. ID4 originally, Bill Pullman, not Bill Paxman, I'm sorry. A different Bill. Bill Pullman was the president of ID4. But originally, I believe ID4 was intended to be Stargate 2. They had originally written it as Stargate 2.
It
was supposed to be the Goa'uld came to Earth after Daniel Jackson and them went through the portal or went through the Stargate and met up with them. And then that was their invasion of Earth was. And then they changed it to be. And they very rightly changed it to be its own thing. And that became ID4.
And Jay Davidson was like, I'm never making another movie ever again. I gave you two movies. That's all I got. The end. I gave you the Oscar and the Crying Game and Oscar nominated in the Crying Game. And I gave you Raw and that's it.
Yep.
No more. No more. No more movies. So anyway.
Yep. Pod culture actually says that yes, it was. I haven't found anything that definitively said it. I've just heard a lot of like plausible rumors, you know, like, you know, the new Valve game about it. So that's why I'm like, I'm not completely on it. But yeah.
Well, that was the way to get a greenlit. If
you
wouldn't get greenlit the other way. Believe it.
So I guess we've already talked about, like, what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Launch Radio tonight?
I pretty much gave it to you, Bobby.
There we go.
We'll be talking about some of the games I've been playing this week. We'll talk about some new modes for old games, such as Diablo 4 and World of Warcraft, some game changer modes released in these games last week. We'll talk about that.
And I don't know if you realize you haven't turned on your games in the back yet. I don't know if you're doing that tonight.
I also walked 5.5 miles today and I'm hot, so I'm trying to keep the temperature down in the room.
I figured it was something about the temperature, and because so awesome. Maybe like at some point, you know, like get like stick figures of Tron and just like put it on the tape it to the monitor when it's not on.
Static image, for real. By the way, check the Pikmin challenge. It's all done.
Thank you. I actually saw it before I went on. I'm like, Rob did a lot today.
I went on a bit of a walk, yeah.
Awesome. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. Unlike OLR, I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It is Memorial Day weekend here in the United States, which means that we get Monday off. But I should still be here on Sunday night. Orange Lounge Radio is taking the long weekend off, so they will not be here. So it'll be just me here on the Voice of Geeks Network next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Come join us. Interact with the show directly. You can find us over on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord. Come join us then. And wow, we have a hype train coming possibly close. Thank you so much for that. We'll get to that in just a second. Also, if there's a hype train that happens, I have to actually talk longer because I can't go off the air until it's done. So that's how you get a little bit more of me, I guess. But we'll try because I don't want to make OLR to get any later. But yeah, so you can find us over on vognetwork.com/discord, or you can find me at Bobby Blackwolf on social media sites, at bobbyblackwolf.com on the Blue Skies. Now, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but maybe it'll be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make this live show work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. And that's what the hype train is here in Twitch. So thank you so much, Sean322, for resubscribing. Thank you so much for that. Mike Deft resubscribed and said, fashionably late, Kappa, the Kappa emote. Never apologize for being late. You being here at all, at any time, is really all that I'm looking for. And then Sean322 cheered another 200 bits, saying, I come every week for the motivational, a winner is you. Well, that's coming up when I hit the button. Thank you so much for that. I will see you next week. So a winner is you. And I hope that we all keep winning as much as we can. I'll see you next week on Memorial Day weekend. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.